Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome to First Things First. Happy New Year to you. I'm Jenna Wolf. This is Nick Wright. Bart Scott is filling in for Chris Carter today. Boys, it is nice to spend the first of the year with both of you.
We all party, man.
Happy New Year,
Mr. Nick Wright.
I saw him at the Shake 'Em Up Club last night.
To the wee hours of what, 7:30 p.m.?
No, come on. We've been going straight since yesterday.
Straight since yesterday, said none of us. Big show today, kicking off the year right. Eagles could still bring back Carson Wentz. Tom Brady knows how tough the road to the Super Bowl will be, but our very big story this morning, could this be the end of the Triple B's in Pittsburgh? An always dramatic Steelers locker room took an even more dramatic turn yesterday. According to multiple reports, Antonio Brown got into a heated argument with Ben Roethlisberger earlier in the week. He reportedly threw a ball at him, walked off, skipped multiple practices, and did not return for the rest of the week. Antonio Brown did show up to Heinz Field on Sunday, however, expecting to play, and he was told he would not be. He reportedly left at halftime in frustration. All right, Nick, we'll start with you. What is your reaction to the latest in Pittsburgh now?
This is not typical Steelers drama. This is not an example of what Coach Mangini would talk about saying at different families. This is a big deal. This week was a playoff game for Pittsburgh. I know they needed help to get into the playoffs. One thing they knew, if they lost to Cincinnati, their season was over. That means it was a playoff week for them and a playoff game for them. Antonio Brown is the best player on this football team. And I don't, the dust up between he and Ben Roethlisberger, I can understand that. There's a circumstance you could present to me where I would say, hey, I might have thrown the ball at him too, depending on how it went down. And I'm sure Bart can elaborate on that. But not showing up to work the following days, forcing Mike Tomlin's hand to where Mike Tomlin had no choice but to bench the best player on his team in their most important game of the year, that's a really big deal and a really bad look for a player in Antonio Brown who has had a really rough season when it comes to things other than catching footballs and catching touchdowns, those things he's still been great at. This goes back to in the offseason when he's dealing with a lawsuit about allegedly throwing furniture off a balcony and almost striking a toddler down at a pool condo. It was an incident where he skipped a practice after having a dust up after a September 16th loss to the Kansas City Chiefs. Like, these things can't happen from the best player on your team. And Antonio Brown this offseason needs to figure out what type of NFL player he wants to be and what type of career and where he wants that career to be moving forward.
This is ballsy. I mean, I play with some personalities. Whether you want to go Chris McAllister, Ray Lewis, Terrell Suggs, yep. I've never heard of somebody. Well, one time at Bandcamp, right, with Chris McAllister, he did something. But, this ain't the Chris McAllister show. I've never heard of somebody walking away from practice, not showing up during the week, a pivotal week to get into the dance. I mean, I don't understand. This tells me, and you hear all the players saying, that's just A.B. going A.B., and I listen to Ryan Clark, and he's talking about, some dust-ups, like, hey, that was the wrong guy to give money. He was yelling at Dick LeBeau, who's a legend, who's not only a football legend, but a Pittsburgh Steelers legend. That just tells me that this guy's been out of control for a long time. And how long has Mike Tomlin been having to deal with this? You talk about the three Bs. You may be down to only one B, because I don't understand how going forward – you allow this guy to be a member of your football team. I think already Juju, much like we talked about, you know, yesterday with Santonio Holmes and Antonio Brown becoming the number one receiver, I think now Juju, he got the team MVP. But you need your best players to be the best people. We understand he's a hard worker, but you can't be a diva, not to this extent.
And it's
It's selfish, and he threw the ball at the wrong person. The one person on that team that he probably couldn't win, you know, through ownership is Ben Roethlisberger, because Ben Roethlisberger is bigger than him, and he didn't understand his place on the totem pole. I don't understand how you come back from this, but you can't move him, because what are you going to get for, you know, arguably, yes, the best receiver in the game, but a guy that you just gave a $68 million extension to a couple of years ago.
The problem is you can't move him. Even if someone wants to give you great draft compensation for him, and even if you think Juju is the heir apparent, they gave him that extension February of 2017. But more importantly, they restructured it 1 year in. So this is convoluted salary cap stuff, but what people need to know is this. If they trade or cut Antonio Brown,
right,
they have a $21 million cap hit on next year's cap or over the next 2 years' cap for Antonio Brown. So it's $21 million of a $200 million cap, about 10%, for him not to be on their football team. I don't know that he's diving into the cap figures, but I think he knows he's pretty untouchable. Mike Tomlin, about 3 years ago, when he was asked about some of Antonio's antics, he almost said incredulously to the media, as written about in the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette this morning, what do you want me to do? Not play him? And it is an interesting point. Like, what do you do when a player is this good, is consistently this productive? He's 1,400 yards basically every single year. It's tough not to play him. He had to go to this extent to not play him. And even then, the team was covering up for him. Yeah. They were calling this a knee injury up until it got out after the game.
How does a team react to this? How does the rest of your locker room? I mean, I wonder going into Sunday's game how much the whole team actually knew what was going on and how they reacted and how he comes back from this. If he financially can't be moved, how you move on from this and get back on the same page with both Big Ben and the rest of the team.
He's going to have one of those come to Jesus moments and understand. And he can get in front. I mean, the fact that he wasn't even there, you know, when the team were exiting yesterday, he didn't even show up yesterday. The fact that Rooney reached out to him, he didn't return owner's calls. Yep. I mean, I don't know how you come back from this. I mean, sometimes you got to eat that money. And it's more important for you to have a culture because, you know, how do you empower, you know, Tomlin to be able to discipline everybody when we know that AB has his own set of rules? And, you know, at the end of the day, you know, this thing is if it's only one B instead of three Bs, then it's time to rebuild and start to think about doing something different in Pittsburgh anyway, especially looking at the rest of the division, seeing where the Ravens are and seeing where the Browns are, what the Browns are doing. You know, we could be witnessing the end of the, you know, Pittsburgh Steelers on top. We may see more of the early Cowher years as opposed to what we become accustomed to seeing.
And it's tough to rebuild, real quick, tough to rebuild with a quarterback going into year 16. A quarterback that is not getting one of these cheap young quarterbacks where you can add a ton of talent and where if you do move Antonio Brown, you get no cap relief from it. But you're in a rough spot, and Tomlin's going to catch a lot of strays on this one, understandably. But the guy he threw the football at is a culture setter
Why? Because he didn't play him?
Don't run a route.
She's asking why Tomlin's going to catch him. No, I think people understand him not playing. Okay. I think people are going to blame Tomlin that a situation could get to this point.
Okay.
Now, I don't know how you control a grown man. I don't know how if Antonio Brown, Tomlin again, a couple years ago when he was asked about Antonio's end zone celebrations and the penalties, he said, I don't know what you want me to do. Yeah. Like, what do you want me to do other than not play the guy? And I'm obviously going to play the guy. But culture is set typically by two people in an organization, if you're fortunate enough to have two of these people in the organization. An established head coach, they have that. And a Hall of Fame quarterback, they have that. Big Ben's never been held accountable, and that predates Tomlin. Yep. That predates Tomlin coming there, whether it was the motorcycle, whether it was the horrifying allegations at the bar, a couple of those, whether it was continually throwing teammates under the bus.
And coaches under the bus.
And I'm curious what Big Ben's going to say about 4.5 hours from now when he does that radio show, because I'm sure he'll sound off on this. You have two guys in that organization that have more power than Antonio Brown. One of them, he only has more power almost in title because all he can do is hurt the team by benching him. Right. The other one acts a fool nearly as much, and not surprisingly, the other one in Big Ben is the one who the ball got thrown at.
And remember the Facebook thing, right? You know,
sure,
how selfish that was. He, you know, intimate setting, an intimate moment where coaches say things that they won't say publicly. He's recording it.
Right.
I mean, I don't know.
And also a week ago, we were talking about how this team voted on an MVP. And even though Antonio Brown put up great numbers this year, they voted for Juju Smith-Schuster, yeah, which I'm sure he felt. And it's indicative of how this team maybe sees him and sees Ben Roethlisberger.
See, I think that was more – Antonio's won that award voted on by his teammates prior to this year 4 times in the previous 6. And Juju actually had – he didn't have the touchdowns, but he had more yards, more catches than AB. I think that was more a slap at Ben Roethlisberger, who hadn't won it once since 2009 and has only won it once ever. That team MVP that the team never votes on the quarterback, who has been for a long time either the best or the second best player on the team, that's an interesting part of the Steelers as well.
All right, we'll take a break, but it will be interesting to hear if Big Ben does speak today
what he has to say about
other things. Probably throw us under the bus just while he's throwing people. Coming up, are the Eagles making a mistake sticking with Nick Foles? Happy New Year's Day, everyone. This is First Things First. Welcome back. We'll get to Nick Foles and the Eagles in just a second. But first, Gator Bowl down in Jacksonville. C.J. Riley of NC State makes a great catch for the touchdown, Nick.
Oh, one-handed.
Oh. Moss. Whenever somebody do that, you just say Moss.
But Moss is more like going over the top of the guy, right? No. This is extending to the back. Well, go ahead.
Moss is anything dynamic. Moss. It's funny. It was Moss ever since I was in the league, man. Moss.
Sticking with college football, trick play in the Holiday Bowl. Northwestern offensive lineman Trey Clark catches the pass, dives across the goal line. Watch it again for the 28-yard touchdown. Here you go.
We call that a business decision. That DB was like, I want no smoke.
That reminded me of what the Patriots pulled out in the playoffs against the Ravens years ago that the Ravens were saying that was cheating on, where they have the guy eligible out to the side. You don't think he's eligible. Look at that.
Illegal,
Fat man touchdown.
And then he has a 39, so it's difficult. I thought that was Jared Lorenzen running down for a route.
On to the NBA. Magic, Hornets, second-year guard Malik Monk takes off.
Levitation.
Oh, my. I didn't see this last night. Now, Malik Monk, I thought he'd be better already. I thought he was a steal they got in last year's draft. His rookie year didn't go quite according to plan, but look at that.
I just barely jumped like that in the 90s, man.
You could never jump like that, Bart.
Mavs Thunder, Russell Westbrook throws the alley-oop to Jeremy Grant, one of Westbrook's 11 assists last night.
Really good win by the Thunder last night. Dominated this game start to finish. Hey, Bart, do you know where Jeremy Grant went to college?
No, but I hated his dad, his uncle.
Oh, Horace and Harvey?
I'm a Bad Boy Pistons fan, so I hated it.
Oh, okay. The answer, by the way, is went to Syracuse, like so many great NBA players. Go get it, Jeremy Grant.
Moving on to the Eagles, let's talk some football again. And the most popular backup quarterback in the league, Nick Foles. He did win their last 3 games, and he did get them into the playoffs. And while Carson Wentz still hasn't been ruled out for the postseason, some are wondering if Philly should stick with Nick. We wonder that every day. Doug Peterson was asked about this yesterday.
Is it fair to say or safe to say that Nick's going to be a quarterback as long as you win?
For this week.
Is there any scenario where...
There's no guarantee we're going to win this game.
I understand. I'm just saying if.
You know. Yeah, I'll evaluate next Monday.
You already did this.
Yeah, right. I know. Thanks.
There.
Thanks for trying.
They did try. You know me. You know how I feel about my local media. They almost got it from him. Bart, what do you think? Should the Eagles stick with Foles or you go back to Wentz as soon as he's cleared to play?
You stick with what's working. You know, the reason that they're on this run has been because Nick Foles was inserted into the starting lineup. Like I said before, he energizes this team. He puts this, you know, this offense in a rhythm and a pace. And they have chemistry. Him and Doug Peterson have some type of chemistry where he understands how to get the best out of Nick Foles. The offense, Alshon Jeffery. The only person that's probably upset is Ertz because
he was getting
all that work when it was Wentz. But now everybody's alive. Everybody, you know, it's run the ball. Shots. And, you know, whenever you do that, you have an opportunity to get these big explosive plays, you know, the time of possession, their control and everything. If he's able to put this team on a run, and like I said, they don't have to go to the Super Bowl, you have real legitimate questions about who's the best quarterback for this team going forward.
Well, when we talk about the best quarterback for this team, it reminds me of something Chris says all the time about players. says 99% of guys in this league are system players. Well, let's just look at that the other way around. What teams are system fits for certain players better than others? I'm not ready to say that with Philly yet. I'm not. I know that they are on another seemingly magical run, but it's not as if with Carson Wentz we haven't seen them be great. We saw them be great, the best team in football for the first 13 games of last year. We saw this year, while the team as a whole struggled, Carson's numbers were actually quite good. His numbers this year are actually comparable to what they were last year pre-injury. But as far as for the rest of this season, Nick Foles, the only quarterback who should play for the Philadelphia Eagles, and that's also for Carson Wentz's benefit. The worst thing that can happen to Carson Wentz is the Eagles upset the Bears, which is the only way this is a discussion, right? Because we know Foles playing this week.
And then he's healthy.
And then they're like, hey, Carson, guess what? You get to play on the road against the number one seed New Orleans Saints. And that game, the Eagles, if they are to get past the Bears, which is a long shot, no matter who the quarterback is, they are an enormous underdog. They will be a greater than touchdown underdog in New Orleans, no matter who. New Orleans is the overwhelming favorite, not only to get to the Super Bowl, but to win it.
And it hurts Wentz if they lose to the Saints.
If they lose under his watch.
Yeah.
If Foles gets to stay undefeated in these must-win games. Okay. What Carson Wentz needs to happen to have all of this go away is for Nick Foles to lose a playoff game. that is because, yes, of course, well, if Carson takes over and they go win a Super Bowl, is that the best? Yeah. Sure. But this team, I don't believe, is good enough to win three consecutive road playoff games, no matter who the quarterback is. So the worst thing that could happen to Wentz and his future in Philly is to get put back in that starting lineup.
But if Nick Foles plays well and they lose, the questions are still going to be there that maybe, you know, because they have to make a decision, because I believe his cap hit is like $20 million.
It's a $20 million team option.
So they're going to let Nick Foles walk away. And if he goes somewhere and thrives, and Carson Wentz can never get them back to the dance, and they're going to say, what if? Because he's a 29-year-old free agent with experience and a Super Bowl MVP.
So, listen, if he plays well and they lose, let's go with that, he being Nick Foles.
Against
the Bears, or even against, let's say they beat the Bears, even against the Saints. Either way, they will let him walk because they've got no choice. Right. Like, they're not going to pick up a $20 million option. They are cap-strapped as is. This Eagles team does not have a lot of room to maneuver. That's without his $20 million option. And then, even if there are people on television, even if there are fans, like, did we keep the wrong guy? It's not the same because he's not in the locker room anymore. There's not going to be the question if they struggle to start next year, should you go to Foles? Because he's going to be playing for Jacksonville or Denver or whomever the hell he's going to be playing for. So this will fix itself. It will figure itself out. The only way it doesn't is if it figures itself out in a different direction, which is they beat the Bears and they beat the Saints. And then there is a real question about which quarterback do you move on from? But we are, to me, a ways away from that, Bart.
I know you're saying he's not a system guy, but somehow Alshon Jeffrey plays better with him, and Nelson Agholor plays better with him, and he seems to work under the Doug Peterson tutelage of how he wants to run that offense better with Nick Foles. So if you take him out of it, do you have to change all of that and the coaching staff's direction to bring Carson Wentz back in and make him successful, or do you keep everything the way it is with Foles?
I think when Carson Wentz comes in, I think they need to scale him back a little bit, because I feel like they thought that he was going to be able to pick up where he left off at that MVP form. And that just wasn't the case. He had a bit of a sophomore slump, but, you know, all things weren't equal. They didn't have the same pieces they had before. I think losing Jay Ajayi really hurt Carson Wentz and what he was able to do. He's a totally different quarterback. He's more mobile. He's a guy that can buy time outside of the pocket, make those off-schedule plays, something that Nick Foles really doesn't do. He's more of a rhythm passer, a rhythm thrower. That back foot hits, and he's going to make a decision with the football. You know, I feel like coming back, they're going to have to make some decisions to try and tweak this lineup, but they don't have a lot of flexibility because they have a lot of guys that's going to be pending. They have a lot of high-priced free agents. They got to make a decision. You know, Peters is a Hall of Famer, but they, instead of letting him go to get some type of salary cap relief, they paid him some more. So they're going to have to make some decisions going forward. They were all in this year, bringing in Haloti Ngata, bringing in, Bennett, so that they can try and make another run. But if they fall short, they're going to have to make some decisions, and Nick Foles is going to be one of them.
I just don't think we should act as if we've never seen this Eagles offense perform at a high level with Carson Wentz. We have. We saw it perform at a high level for 12 and a half games last year under Carson Wentz. The entire team was underachieving for the first 13 games of this season, two of which were quarterbacked by Nick Foles. Now, what has happened these last 3 weeks, I love it. Like, I don't have a rooting interest on the NFC side of the bracket, but the most interesting thing is the Eagles keep winning. I root for, to steal line from Colin Cowherd, I root for interesting. Like, the most interesting thing is that we get a Drew Brees-Nick Foles matchup in the Superdome in New Orleans, and we see what happens. And if that does come to pass, then you do have to start asking really tough questions, and we're not even mentioning, even if Wentz is better, how much of an injury risk is a guy who was injured his last year in college, who had a massive leg injury last season,
and
is dealing with a back injury now? But if this goes the way Vegas says it's going to go, which is the Bears win this game by about a touchdown, then you know who you go with? The bigger, stronger, faster, more athletic, stronger
Your
arm,
franchise
number
guy.
Two overall pick.
Yeah, gave him a lot for him.
Right, and by the way, this could work out great for Nick Foles. He has an option. He will be with. He saw how Teddy Bridgewater played in Week 17. It does. We don't know what any of the. If Flacco's getting cut, is he gonna? What the market for him will be? Nick Foles might get his own team next year and see if this magic is transferable.
Quickly, who do you think the players in that locker room would like to quarterback their team on Sunday?
I think they like Wentz, but I think they love Nick Foles. I think he's just a guy that you root for. For everything that I hear, that he's a leader, he's fun to be around, and you root for guys. Yeah, everybody loves the underdog.
I think the guys in the locker room know Wentz is better. I think the guys in the locker room would be furious if Nick Foles got benched during this run. I think there is the feeling of
so
running, run with the hot hand.
Yeah.
Go with what's working. Like, to cross sports just for a moment, it's like there are sometimes NBA teams go on a run in a fourth quarter with their best player on the bench. Everyone knows the best player's on the bench, but you don't want to upset the right. rhythm of what's going on. Take that to just week to week with the playoffs. And they know the stage isn't going to be too big next week or the week after for Nick Foles. The one of the question marks for Carson Wentz, as is the case with Mahomes, with Watson, with Trubisky,
playoff
is playoff
experience.
He doesn't have any. We know the stage won't be too big for Foles.
All right, we got to take a break. Coming up, who's more important to the Cowboys' playoff success? Is it Dak? Is it Zeke? What are they going to have to do to face a tough Seattle team? That's next on First Things First. On Saturday, it is a Big Ten showdown on Fox as Michigan State hits the hardwood against the conference foe, Ohio State. Catch it all at 11:30 a.m. Eastern on Fox and the Fox Sports app. Time for us to go viral on this New Year's Day. Pat Mahomes threw a beautiful 89-yard pass to DeMarcus Robinson on Sunday to give him 50 passing touchdowns this season. Came as a big surprise to Chiefs punter Dustin Colquitt. Take a listen.
Now back-to-back drops by Conley and Kelsey makes it third and long and really puts him in a tough spot. Yeah.
Third and 10, Mahomes, straight drop. Stepping up and throwing long, has a man downfield and he's got it! DeMarcus Robinson!
Wow, this is unreal. I mean, I thought for sure I was gonna punt. I gotta get my gloves. This is ridiculous, man. Oh my gosh. Dude, this is crazy. Are you guys kidding me? Are you kidding? What?
It took me a while to figure out that it was him that was talking.
Oh, yeah. It was because he thought he's the punter.
Yeah.
So it's third and long from their own 11.
No
he's
worries.
Like, I'm going to have to go punt. And now he has to run all the way to the other side of the field because he's the holder for the extra point.
Such a punter, man. Wally looking like Willie Beeman out there. Beeman, I told you to get your helmet 20 seconds ago.
He doesn't need the gloves to punt. He thought he was going to be punting. That was a great moment for Mahomes to eclipse the 50 touchdown mark. He had just gone over 5,000 yards passing. That was his final touchdown pass of what should be a unanimous MVP season, will be an MVP season for Patrick Mahomes.
If he can take this thing and keep this momentum, a legend, a star's already been born, but a legend is born if he's able to go to the Super Bowl and do some magic.
Last quarterback for the Kansas City Chiefs to win a playoff game in Arrowhead was a different legend. His name was Joe Montana.
Yeah.
25 years ago, Pat Mahomes is going to have an opportunity in about 12 days to add his name to that very short list.
All right, moving on. Time for stories to start your morning. The NFL playoffs are here, and Vegas gives the New Orleans Saints the best odds to win Super Bowl 53. All right, Nick, listen closely. The Saints are plus 225, which means if you bet $100, you win 225.
Good job, Jen.
Let me go through that one more time.
No, don't worry about that.
All right, Bart, you agree the Saints should be the favorites to win it all?
I think so, because they have, you know, they got a style that can travel, even though it's going to go through the Superdome. But they have, you know, Super Bowl experience, and they have playmakers at every level, whether it's offensively, defensively. They can run, ground and pound you. They can take the air out of the game, but also they can beat you over the top. It's going to be interesting to see, you know, if Ted Ginn can really, you know, provide what they need, that deep threat, that explosive player, because Michael Thomas is a good player, but he's not the vertical threat that Ted Ginn can present and open everything up in the middle.
It's not surprising the two biggest favorites are the one seeds. They should be the biggest favorites. The Saints are the top favorite, the Chiefs right after them. What the Saints have that the Chiefs don't is they don't have a glaring weakness. The Chiefs have a glaring weakness. It's not their history, it's their defense. The Saints should be the favorite. I think most people would be very surprised if the Saints don't at least make it to the Super Bowl. I don't know if the same can be said about any team out of the AFC.
All right, let's talk about LeBron James for a second. Still one of the game's greatest players in year 16. That's according to basketball pundits. But it's also according to LeBron James, apparently. He recently laid out what he believes was his defining moment in the NBA. It was beating the Warriors in the 2016 finals. Here's what LeBron said that moment meant to him.
That one right there made me the greatest player of all time.
For so many reasons.
I was super, super ecstatic to win one for Cleveland because of the 52-year drought. Like, I was ecstatic. Like, obviously, I showed that the first wave of emotion was when y'all, everyone saw me crying. Like, that was all for 52 years, everything in sports going on in Cleveland. And then after I stopped, I was like, that one right there made you the greatest player of all time. You know, everybody was just talking how they were the greatest team of all time. Like, they was the greatest team to ever assemble. And for us to come back, you know, the way we came back in that fashion, I was like, you did something special. That's probably one of the only times in my career I felt like, oh, like you did something special. I haven't really had time to really like sit back and think, but that was a moment. Crazy.
All right, Nick, you agree with LeBron? Would you look back on that and say that was the moment?
That's the exact moment. And he's exactly right, because up until that run, LeBron was already, as far as individual statistics, on pace to become probably the greatest individual statistical player ever. It's going to be him, Kareem, and Wilt. Like, that was it. But what he didn't have was the overall team success. And what that Game 7 of that 2016 NBA Finals did was it cemented or put a cap on the greatest five-year run any basketball player has ever had. Like, here's the five-year run. He ended the original Big Three in Boston with a 45-15-5 on the road, down 3-2 in the Eastern Conference Finals, and then beat the team that Bart was talking about could have become the Big Three, KD, Russ, and Harden, in the NBA Finals. The next year, his team won 27 straight games. He won not only MVP again for the fourth time, but Game 7 of the NBA Finals, hit the jump shot to seal it in the 37-12 game. The following year, went back to the finals, averaged 28 a game on 57%, and the guy guarding him got finals MVP. The next year, went back to the finals, with his second best player being Matthew Dellavedova, and the guy guarding him won finals MVP, despite LeBron going 36-13-9 for the NBA finals. And then that year, down 3-1 against a 73-win team, without home court advantage, with everything stacked against him, he goes 41-16-7, 41-8-11, and then 27-11-11 in a game where he hit the free throw to ice the game and had the single greatest defensive play in the history of the sport. That is the best five-year run in the history of the game, and that run made him the greatest player in the history of the game. It's not – what's up, Bart?
Best five-year run ever?
Yeah, tell me a better five-year run.
How about MJ from 90 to 98?
Okay, but that's – here's
running, right, and he took a year off. If he didn't take a year off – he would have won seven in a row.
Okay, well, so find me the 5 years, Bart.
And let's talk about the assist that he got from the NBA because they suspended, you know, they suspended Draymond Green. How about that
one? You know, it's a really good point because the game without Draymond, he scored 41 points. And then Draymond was back for game 6 and he scored 41 points. And Draymond was there for game 7, and he had a triple-double to win it.
It would have never went that far. If you know the NBA.
Well, tell Draymond to keep his hands to himself.
They put one in. They put one out, man. Come on.
But you said,
I give him some credit because he took Cleveland. You know, he won a championship for Cleveland, mm-hmm. which we know how difficult that is. But him saying he's the greatest player of all time, come on.
Well, you said
come on,
you mentioned Jordan. Jordan didn't have a 5-year stretch better than that. There's no 5-year stretch any player has ever had where they've won more than 3 finals MVPs.
Are we both using
Are
we both using the same things to determine what makes the best player? You're using
it's not numbers, man. You talk about fluffed up numbers, man. Of course, it's a different game. It's a different era.
Okay.
So of course you can put up more numbers and more statistics, especially when you're the biggest player on the court and nobody can't stop you and you can run through. Yeah, I mean, MJ played in an era where it was more skill, I believe, in NBA per player, and it was a more of a physical type of game. It was a more slowed down pace. And listen,
I just want to make sure I understand just real quick, because the point you just made was LeBron's bigger and stronger than everybody, right? And not the center.
And the rules are offensively slack.
Okay, so LeBron's bigger and stronger than everybody, yet he wouldn't have thrived in an era that rewarded physicality?
No, he could have. But tell me this. Uh-huh. What great player did LeBron deny a championship to?
Kevin Durant, he did it.
He got it eventually.
Okay, no.
Karl Malone, Charles Barkley, Patrick Ewing, all sitting ringless because of MJ.
Yeah, absolutely correct. But you asked who he denied a championship to. He beat Kawhi Leonard for a championship, beat Tim Duncan for a championship, beat Kevin Durant for a championship.
Lost to Dirk Nowitzki.
James Harden, absolutely. And that's what made that run so impressive.
He ran to the West to run away from the Golden State Warriors trying to get Anthony Davis to come because he needed help.
He ran from the West to run away from the Warriors. I don't know how that makes sense. However, the Nowitzki finals, the Mavs finals, is the lowest point for any all-time great player ever. The problem for people that want to deny what they're seeing is what he followed that up with is the greatest 5-year stretch. Anybody's pick your favorite player. None of them have more finals MVPs over 5 years than LeBron did in that stretch. None of them have a more impressive individual or team resume than LeBron does over that stretch. You say LeBron ran to the West. Why did Jordan not win 8 straight? He left the sport, right?
Yeah.
And then the one he came, did he leave for 2 full years or a year and a half? Year and a half, right? Because when he came back, he played that season. Something happened. They didn't win the championship.
Let's see. 6 is greater than 3, right?
Yeah, listen, you can always count the rings. You can always do the argument of count the rings, but in that case, then it's Russell number 1, Kareem and Jordan are tied. Robert Horry's got to be a first ballot Hall of Famer.
There's some guys that drove the bus and there's some guys that were passing.
So Bill Russell is without question the greatest player of all time. Without question, he's 11 of them.
He's the greatest winner of all time.
Okay, so
George boasts the best. You know, he's the
Jordan's
best,
both
best player. He's
got
the best
it.
Player.
Okay.
No, he's Good the best know. Player of all time.
LeBron got that right.
All right.
No, liar.
LeBron got that right.
No.
Jenna?
Why don't we do something where we can both agree? Let's talk about the Dallas Cowboys. They took care of business in Week 17. Good win for the team. Good performance from the quarterback, Dak Prescott. Prescott will need another one next week against the Seahawks. He'll also need Ezekiel Elliott. So Zeke won the rushing title despite sitting out Sunday's game. His head coach, Jason Garrett, said the move keeps him, quote, fresher going forward. Bart, what do the Cowboys need out of Zeke if they're going to go ahead and beat this Seattle Seahawks team?
They need him to set the tone. They're on like I said, Ezekiel Elliott's on a collision course with Bobby Wagner. He's going to have to put his foot in his chest. He's going to have to say, foot in chest, repeat. Listen, the only way you beat a team like the Seattle Seahawks is to out-physical them, right? And you got it. You can't try and run around them. You can't try and gadget them. It's only one thing they respect, physicality. You got to say, listen, this is going to be one of these in the phone booth type of games. You're going to have to set the tone. You set the tone early in practice by saying, listen, this is the game plan. We're coming downhill. We're putting the ball on our best player. We're going to take shots. That's the only chance they have, because if they try and not stick to their identity, who they are, then the advantage is going to go to the Seattle Seahawks.
And here's the other thing. They need Zeke to be great. And he, by the way, since the Titans game, he's had 100 yards from scrimmage in every single game leading into Week 17 where he didn't play. He has been great. But they don't only need him to be great to score. They need him to be great to keep their defense, the Dallas defense, off the field. Because quietly, this last month, that Dallas defense, it really did peak with that Saints performance. And since then, it's been leaking a little bit of oil. They've given up 23, 23, 20, and 35 points in their final month of football. So I don't know that you can just say, our defense is going to hold Seattle down to 16 points. We're only going to need 17 to win. I think Dallas has to look at this game saying, We're probably going to need 27 points to win this football game, and we're going to have to keep Seattle's offense off the field because Russell Wilson has shown time and again this year in his career he's a great fourth quarter quarterback, right? That the playoffs, that fourth quarter can be the entire game. He has the ability to be a drop back 40 times a game passer if they need him to be. So that's why Zeke's got to keep them off the field.
Do you trust, though, that if they do find themselves far behind, that Dak will go out there and maybe can just from what you've seen in the last couple weeks, can start getting them back into it?
Well, this is going to be on Scott Linehan, right? He's going to have to try and design some explosive plays. Understanding that Seattle at his core is a cover three team, they're going to have to move Amari Cooper around so that they can't get that, you know, high safety third cornerback on top of him and take him away. They're going to have to put him in a slot because what kills cover three is four verticals, right? It forces you to have to communicate. It forces one of those safeties to have to say, I have to carry a receiver. And it's going to be up to Dak to find that safety that's carrying the receiver. They don't have a Cam Chancellor. They don't have an Earl Thomas. They have backups and replacements for those guys. That's where you're going to have opportunities to get your shots. Not on the outside. I think that Seattle's solid on the outside. They're going to play so deep. You're going to get those opportunities in the slot.
The Chargers, the Saints, the Rams, the Chiefs, these are all teams that this year have shown they can fall down by multiple scores and come back to tie a game, come back to take a lead, come back to win a game. The Cowboys and the Ravens are the two teams in this tournament that I would say if at any point they're down 10 points, the game's over. Yeah. I don't think they have a path to victory where they can come back from double digits down. Like anybody, you can get down a touchdown, no problem. But if you are down multiple scores, what that allows you to do, because it removes the Cowboys' running game to a degree, it puts the onus on Zeke, and it allows a team like Seattle just say, oh, this is perfect. All we want to do is run the ball anyway.
Right.
I saw Seattle in a game against the Rams. They almost came back to win. 5 minutes left, down 12, running the football because it's who they are. That's down 12. What are they going to do if they get up 12? They're just going to run the football. So, no, I do not think they have the firepower if they get down multiple scores to come back. But nobody wants to be down multiple scores. Dallas is at home. Dallas is the favorite. Dallas should be in position where this is a three-point game one way or another the whole game. They got arguably the best kicker in the playoffs on the NFC side in Brett Maher, a guy they cut Dan Bailey to keep, and it's been proven right. Have it come down to something like that because they're not going to win a shootout and they're not going to have a great comeback victory.
All right. LeBron James, Michael Jordan, happy.
MJ, I got you, baby.
I know you do.
Send me a pair of kicks.
All right, let's move on to the Cowboys, get back to football. After a sluggish 3-5 start, it seemed no one but Jerry Jones had this team making a big playoff run. Since then, Cowboys got a receiver. They shored up a great defense. They're now preparing for their playoff game against Seattle on Saturday. The Seahawks beat Dallas earlier this season, but again, that feels like it was about 38 million years ago. Here's Ezekiel Elliott on his mindset entering the playoffs.
Just knowing, you know, going into these playoffs, I'm going to have a probably the heaviest workload I've had all season. So just great getting fresh and ready going into this last stretch of the season, ready for whatever they throw at me. It's hard to make the playoffs in the NFL. And so, I mean, that makes the moment that much more important. But, you know, I live for these moments. I love it. I can't wait to go out there and compete Saturday night. And I think this team is ready.
All right, Chris, let's break this down a little bit. How did Ezekiel Elliott and the Cowboys match up against Seattle?
Well, Ezekiel Elliott is the guy that stirs the drink for that Dallas Cowboys offense, and he was able to get some rest in Week 17 because the Cowboys took care of the division in Week 16 in their win over the Bucs. So the fact that Zeke is fresh, and he said as much when he was addressing the media yesterday, he said it usually takes him till Friday or Saturday to get ready for a game, to feel like he's ready, but he feels ready now.
Yeah.
I think that week off is really going to pay dividends for the Dallas Cowboys. But in terms of the X's and O's, I mean, this is one of those situations where the Cowboys are going to have to run against a loaded box. We're talking about 8 and 9 man fronts. The Seattle Seahawks, that's what they do. They're in an 8-man front or more over 30% of the time, which is third in the National Football League.
That's huge percentage.
That's a huge percentage. So, I mean, the Dallas Cowboys are going to have to find ways to be efficient in the run game, even when they don't have the most favorable looks. But also, your quarterback is going to have to make some plays down the field. And I think that was the impetus for Jason Garrett to make sure that Dak Prescott did play in Week 17
and play well
when they had nothing to play for against the New York Giants. And Dak Prescott played really well. Great. That was a confidence builder, especially with some of the looks that the Giants presented to Dak Prescott. A lot of split safety looks, which is not the easiest for the passing game, but he was able to extend plays and make plays down the field. Blake Jarwin, Cole Beasley. I mean, you saw that. And so the fact that he's going to have that performance to draw on for confidence, I think that bodes well for the Dallas Cowboys.
I want to stay on Zeke for a moment. I agree with everything you said about Dak. All week I've said it was the most meaningless game I've ever seen because of what it allows Dak to go into the playoffs feeling. Defense is having to see, like, oh, now we got to account for Blake Jarwin somehow. Like, all of that was good. But for Zeke, he's going to be the best player in this game, not named Russell Wilson. He's going to be the most important player in this game, not named Russell Wilson. And what we've seen from the Cowboys, you mentioned they started 3-5. Since then, they're 7-1. We can throw out the week 17 because Zeke didn't play it. In those seven games where they went 6-1, locked up the division in that stretch, 29 touches a game and 160 yards from scrimmage per game. He has been dominant. Their most important game of the year, the game that would have flipped the division one way or another, the overtime win against Philly. People remember, Amari had a huge game. He had the three touchdowns. Zeke in that game, 40 touches, 192 yards from scrimmage. Every single game in this stretch, he's had at least 23 touches. He's had at least 110 yards from scrimmage. An average game for him is the game against Atlanta, 30 for 201, or against Indy in a loss, 25 for 128. He has been a workhorse, and now he's fresh. That is the Cowboys' path to victory. Yes, they're going to have to make a couple big plays. There's going to have to be a couple times that they have nine in the box. They say, you know what? Amari Cooper, single high safety, or maybe no safety if it's a zero blitz. You know, we are taking our shot to a guy we traded first round pick for. But they're going to have to take those shots because they're in second and short because Zeke got him 8 yards on first down. Zeke has to be dominant. Like that is, and the Seahawks have been excellent in the last 6 weeks of football against the run, particularly. Mm-hmm. This is going to have to be one of those situations where the other team knows what we're going to do. But we're going to do it anyway because Tyron Smith should be fresh.
Yes.
Zach Martin should be fresh. The offensive line should be as fresh and as good as it's been all year, should be the healthiest it's been all year, aside from Travis Frederick, obviously. Let's see if they can impose their will because that's the way they win this playoff game.
I've sat next to you for the last 6-7 weeks talking about the Cowboys, and not once have we had a segment where we just talk about how important Zeke is. We've talked about Dak. We've talked about that O-line. We've talked about the defense. Are we almost taking Zeke for granted? I mean, yes, he has to be perfect, but he's been that great. He's the one thing you can absolutely count on this Cowboys team. Is there any doubt going against Seattle that he won't be?
No, I don't have any doubt that Zeke won't have a good performance against the Seattle Seahawks. Now, what I am worried about is that Dallas Cowboys defensive front seven going up against that Seattle rushing attack. I mean, because Seattle is just gashing people. They're number one in rushing in the NFL for a reason. That zone scheme is hard to stop. And then, of course, you can't account for Russell Wilson when he goes off script and he's able to create with his legs. So I think that Dallas Cowboys defense is going to have to step up. I can't ignore the fact that they got gashed by the Indianapolis Colts back in week 15. Mm-hmm. I mean, they rung up over 170 yards rushing with Marlon Mack. And so when you start talking about Chris Carson and that Seattle Seahawks run game, I think the Dallas Cowboys front seven has got their work cut out for them. So I think it's going to be important for the Dallas Cowboys offensively to sustain drives, to be good on third downs. And that's not necessarily something that they've been great against playoff caliber teams.
Sure.
So I think that's something that we have to keep an eye on, that Dallas Cowboys offense being able to help their defense out by sustaining drives and keeping those guys off the field.
The number one rush offense is playing in this game. It's not the team with Zeke. It's the
Seattle.
Yeah. And what they've done since week 4, 12 of 13 games, they've had at least 150 on the ground. They've averaged 177 on the ground at over 5 yards per carry. The Ravens have gotten a lot of attention as of late since Lamar was added to the lineup for being so run heavy. Seattle's been a lighter version of that all year long, which is interesting because in the previous few years, ever since Marshawn Lynch left, that had been their issue, was they couldn't establish a run. They couldn't run block, and they didn't have the personnel to do it. They thought they addressed it in the first round this year with Rashad Penny. He's been a healthy scratch most of the season. It's been Chris Carson who's been the bell cow for them. The Cowboys' front's going to have to be great, or else Seattle's going to have 12-play, 7-minute, 82-yard drives. They're going to have long drives that shorten the game, and Seattle feels great if it's a close game with Russell Wilson in the fourth quarter. Like, that is, there has been the recipe to get into the postseason. To get to your point, Jenna, one of the reasons that we have taken Zeke as a given is he's been a given.
Right.
Since he, at Ohio State, he was a given. His rookie year, he wins the rushing title. Last year, he rushes more yards per game than any player in the league. The only reason he doesn't win the rushing title is the suspension. This year, he's yards per game, the best in the league. Again, like Ezekiel Elliott is the best runner of the football in the NFL, and that's with a healthy or unhealthy offensive line.
But you know who isn't a given is his quarterback, Dak Prescott. You brought that up earlier. Before we go to break, talk a little bit about how much pressure is on Dak Prescott to pick up where Week 17 ended and a few games prior.
Well, there's going to be a lot of pressure on Dak Prescott just because he has not won a playoff game. I know 2 years ago they had the number one seed in the NFC and they lost in the divisional round to the Green Bay Packers. So even though they're at home again in the postseason, they're going up against a head coach and quarterback combination that you have to say you trust more than the Dallas Cowboys have in place right now with Jason Garrett and Dak Prescott. So, I mean, it's a situation where there's going to be some pressure. Dak is going to feel the intensity of the playoffs, especially in this particular matchup where everybody is saying that you have a team from a talent standpoint that should be able to take care of the Seattle Seahawks at home.
I hope someone told Dak this week to watch that playoff game against the Packers, because he was extraordinary. That was the capstone of his amazing rookie season. He
was good in the second half of that
game.
Okay.
No, absolutely. Yeah. In the first half, the whole Cowboys offense
They had
stalled.
A double-digit deficit going into the second half.
Right, but that's kind of to my point. He was down double digits in a playoff game against Aaron Rodgers, and they were there at the end. It took a 50-plus yard curving field goal to beat him. He was so good in the second half of that game. Remind Dak, you can do this. I don't know that I believe it, but make him believe it. You can do this in the biggest game of your life. You went toe-to-toe with Aaron Rodgers, almost played him to a draw. That could maybe add to the confidence he built on in that Giants game last week.
All right, let's take a break. Coming up, could the Giants really move on from Odell Beckham? That's the rumor. Nobody loves a rumor more than I do. That's next on First Things First. On Saturday, it's a big showdown in Dallas as Russell Wilson and the Seahawks take on Ezekiel Elliott and the Cowboys in the NFC wildcard game. It all starts at 7:30 Eastern, 4:30 Pacific, Saturday on Fox and the Fox Sports app. Time for us to go viral on First Things First. Check out this video Lonzo Ball put on his Instagram story on his way to work. Ran into teammate Lance Stephenson in traffic. Gotta love LA traffic.
And then just pulled off on him. Same exact thing
but
happened
look at
to
Lance.
Me. I was driving through New Jersey, I'm not going to say where, and I drive up on this iced out Bentley, and I'm like, whose could that be? And I look, and it's my man Chris Canny rocking to
Come
some
on,
Indigo
man.
Girls.
Come on, man. Stop it.
What?
No, you didn't see all
did,
that.
Did you hear you were rocking out to?
I heard.
Yes, the Indigo Girls.
That's how you
Tell can, me what
that's
album.
That's how you know his story ain't true, Jenna.
Well, maybe.
That's
listen,
how you know it's not true.
Maybe I got the album wrong. I don't know. I just know Canny was doing like air guitar, a little air drums.
No, Nick. No. That's a nice try.
Well,
you dribble,
wrong.
You shoot. You hope for the best, but no, not on that one.
I'm just telling you what I saw. No. Maybe it was a different 6'9" black guy with a Bentley in Jersey. I don't know.
Oh, you can tell I'm 6'9" while I'm in the car.
What? Absolutely.
Oh, okay. Yeah, right. Okay.
You were wearing a uniform. Said C. Canty.
Time for stories to start your morning. Last night, Kawhi Leonard dropped a career-high 45 against the Utah Jazz. He went 16 of 22 from the field. He made 13 free throws. Nick, how impressive was Kawhi last night?
Kawhi was spectacular. Shot 73% from the field. It was a Kobe Bryant memorial stat line.
Yep.
45 points, one assist in the game. Kawhi doing it on both ends for a team that's been, without question, one of the three best teams in the league thus far. The shocking thing to, I think, a lot of people is just Kawhi's third career 40-point game.
Mm-hmm.
He has, dozens of games in the mid-30s, but hasn't been able to crack that 40-point mark much last night's career high.
Well, I don't think he's ever been in a position as a player to have to do that. He had a better supporting cast in San Antonio in terms of guys that can score the basketball at a high clip. In Toronto, they're asking him to do more of that in terms of being a scorer, and we all know he's got the tools to get it done.
He's been so good this year, all year long.
It's moving on to the Lakers now. LeBron has been ruled out for tonight's game against the Thunder. This will be the fourth game that he's missed since injuring his groin last week. Lakers are 1-2 without the King so far. Nick, how does the team look without LeBron?
I mean, they've had two games that came down to the very end. They won one, they lost one. They had one game they didn't play well at all. They've been okay. I thought the last game they played where they closed it out well was a great a confidence builder. Brandon Ingram played one of his best games of the season. After this Thunder game, they get the Knicks at home, then at Minnesota, at Dallas. I thought he was going to miss 3 to 5 games. Now seems more likely it's going to be closer to 5 to 8 games. We'll see how the Lakers do in this stretch.
Yeah, they just need to give LeBron James as much time as he needs to get healthy from that groin and be 100%, because you don't want this to be something that's lingering throughout the regular season. And with all the parity in the West, with everybody being right there, you know, 4 or 5 games of each other, you've got time to be able to let LeBron James heal up. So you need to be patient with that.
All right, moving on. Last night, Urban Meyer coached his last game for Ohio State in the Rose Bowl win over Washington. Quarterback Dwayne Haskins put on a show. Tossed 3 touchdowns, threw for 251 yards. Our own Chris Carter was there. He tweeted that he's certain Haskins is heading to the NFL. Kenny, what'd you make of Haskins' night yesterday?
Well, I mean, a lot of people were talking about Haskins potentially being the number one pick, and I only think he solidified that in that performance in the Rose Bowl. This is a chance for a national audience to be able to see his skill set on display against Washington, and I think that he showed out. I mean, you can see that he's got a live arm. He can make all the throws, but the thing that's most impressive to me is his poise in the pocket. And you can tell that whatever stage he's on, it's not going to be too big for him. To me, because there's always a demand for a quarterback, and he seems like he is the clear-cut number one quarterback of this upcoming class, if he declares, I think Dwayne Haskins showed why he should be the number one overall pick.
The only knock on him is lack of experience, that he only a one-year redshirt sophomore with only 1 year starting. I can't remember a player who improved their draft stock more over the final quarter of a season. Like, the Maryland game, which shouldn't have been as close as it was, but he brought them back in that game, was spectacular. He whooped Michigan. The Big Ten championship game, he was great. And yesterday, Ohio State won this game after the third quarter. He didn't make hardly any mistakes through the first three quarters. With Justin Herbert going back to school, who else would be the top quarterback taken? If he is going to be the number one pick, though, you think that means Arizona is going to be trading the pick to a team?
Oh, no doubt. Arizona's not giving up on Josh Rosen. I'm just saying that somebody is going to trade up to number one just because you don't have a lot of options in this quarterback class.
He's the top quarterback on the board.
Moving on to the New York Jets, who have themselves a quarterback. They're looking for their next head coach. After moving on from Todd Bowles earlier this week, they're expected to interview former Packers head coach Mike McCarthy and former Texas Tech head coach Cliff Kingsbury. Both could potentially help mentor future of the franchise, Sam Darnold. All right, Candy, would either of these guys be a good fit for the New York Jets?
I think Mike McCarthy would be a good fit just because you're not projecting him in that role. Mike McCarthy spent 13 seasons as the Packers head coach, and he had 125 wins and a Super Bowl championship on his resume. With Cliff Kingsbury, you're talking about somebody that was a former collegiate head coach at Texas Tech, lost his job, and then signed up to be the offensive coordinator at SC. I still think it's a learning curve in terms of going from the college ranks and being a head coach to the pro ranks and being a head coach. You're talking about the difference in coaching kids versus grown men.
So, Nick, what would be the appeal then for Kingsbury?
I don't understand the appeal for Cliff Kingsbury as a head coach. I get it as an offensive coordinator. If the story was the Jets are thinking about bringing them both there, McCarthy is the head coach, Kingsbury is the offensive coordinator, because the knock on McCarthy from the people that study football in a way I don't, and his route combinations and the lack of diversity in the offense, that's the knock on him. Kingsbury obviously can coach offense. We know that. But he was 35-40 at Tech. He was 19-35 in his career in the Big 12. He got fired at his alma mater, where he's a legendary player and where he was one of the most popular people, probably the most popular person in the city of Lubbock. And he got fired. He got an offensive coordinator job in college. Now he's an NFL head coaching candidate. I don't understand it. Here's the appeal of Cliff Kingsbury. Kind of feels like Sean McVay.
Mm-hmm.
But Sean McVay had come up in the NFL. I know he's young and they both have the same similar beards and they're both good looking.
What do I call
but
him?
Like, he's sexy
spicy
Sean McVay.
Looking.
Spicy looking, that's what I called him. But like, Sean McVay was a quarterback's coach, was a coordinator, was in the NFL, and Sean McVay had the benefit of taking over for Jeff Fisher, where it felt like anything knew would be welcome, and had the benefit of number one overall pick Jared Goff, who we had seen, people had already written him off as a bust. So like, there was very little expectation, very little pressure, if you will, in that spot, if such a thing exists, NFL head coaching job. I don't understand the Cliff Kingsbury thing, and I wish him well, but if you don't show that you can be a quality collegiate head coach, the failing upwards is bizarre to me. He took a job at SC as a coordinator. That's a perfect spot for him. Why the Jets would be considering him for a head coach, I don't understand.
Is there something to who would be a better fit for Sam Darnold? Do you want a guy that's been in the league for a long time who's worked with a future Hall of Fame quarterback? Or do you want someone who's coming up in the ranks, willing to take chances, willing to see what he's got? I don't know. Is there something to that, to who he'd fit better with their quarterback?
Well, I think they're looking at it and seeing that Cliff Kingsbury could probably implement a style of play that's conducive to today's game, right, that takes advantage of the rules and defenders not being able to control the middle of the field. We see these wide open offenses with the Los Angeles Rams, with the Kansas City Chiefs, and young quarterbacks being able to thrive in this basketball on grass type of scheme. But in terms of being able to stabilize the Jets as an organization and make sure that this team plays with the level of discipline that's required to have success in this league, I can't trust Cliff Kingsbury to be able to do all of those things. And then the Jets have a funky hierarchy in terms of how the general manager and the head coach both report to the owner rather than the head coach reporting to the GM. Right. Just with those kind of dynamics, I don't know that I want to have a rookie NFL head coach in that type of situation. That's why I lean toward McCarthy.
And the best thing for Sam Darnold is not necessarily a coach with a certain scheme. The best thing for Sam Darnold is a coach that's not going to get fired in a couple years. The best thing for Sam Darnold
is just a good coach.
It's a good coach that's going to generate stability. But I do think everyone that's looking for the next Sean McVay, or maybe the next Matt Nagy, who's similar in McVay, who's a young guy, got his chance, he's an offensive mastermind, needs to remember that Sean McVay hired Wade Phillips, who's been a coordinator and coach in this league for 50 years, to run his defense. Matt Nagy has Vic Fangio, who's one of the most longest tenured defensive coordinators in the league. He might lose him to a head coaching job this year, mm-hmm. but both of those guys basically said, I know I'm the head coach, but my job's the offense. I'm going to hire someone 20 to 50 years my senior to take care of the defensive side of the football. If you go with a guy like Cliff Kingsbury because you love what he can do with your quarterback, you also need to find someone that's going to take care of the other side of the ball. And I don't know, you know who'd be great at that? Todd Bowles.
Yeah.
But I don't know that he's going to come back as coordinator for the Jets. So I think people have to work this all the way through and also understand, like, I'm old enough to remember Mark Trestman when he was the mm-hmm. sexy coordinator, even though he wasn't the same age. It was his guy from the CFL who's going to revolutionize things. And it didn't work out. I don't know that everyone's going to find their version of Matt Nagy or Sean McVay.
The Houston Texans have big weekend plans. They'll face division rival Indianapolis on Sunday. Many surprised they're even here, given the way they started their season, losing their first three games, but they bounced back to win 9 in a row, claim the AFC South, and finish the season 11-5. It's been quite a journey for this team and for Deshaun Watson, who missed all but 6 games last year. Here's more from the Texans quarterback.
Just look at the season, starting 0-3, you know, and then, you know, tacking on 9 and winning out 10 of the last 12. I mean, it's everything we earned. We earned the right to be here. We earned the right to do what we did Sunday and be champs in the division. But, you know, it's a new year, new season, and, you know, we got to start over and try to be 1-0 this week and try to continue it. Played in a lot of big games before, you know, in college and stuff, but, I mean, you can't really, you know, pick college playoffs with the NFL. This is, you know, the hardest business, you know, top notch. It's a whole new season, whole new you know, speed of game. So it's going to be, you know, new for me, of course, because it's my first one, and it's going to be a lot of fun.
Coach, it's a big stage for Deshaun Watson. Do you think this Texan team is getting the respect that it deserves after the season it had from around the league?
Well, the thing about respect, you remember the Mae West quote, if you have to tell people you're a lady, then you're not. And then if you ever have to ask for respect, then it's probably, you know, not merited. But in this case, I think they do merit respect. Now, they made it a little bit tougher on themselves by starting as mm-hmm. big in the hole as they did, and right. then really lost 2 out of the last 4 games. But they've also got to go into this game, and they've got to establish that it's not going to be T.Y. Hilton's mm-hmm. place. It's not going to be Andrew Luck being the best quarterback on the field. They've got to mm-hmm. they've got to find a way to slow down that offense. They've got to do things differently than they have in the first 2 games in order for them to take that jump. And for Deshaun Watson, I think that he's going to produce a lot of things on the ground, but one thing he can't do is continue this sack trend that he's had all season. And look, saying that at this point in the playoffs, it's probably going to continue the way it has. Mm-hmm. But those sacks at some point, that's going to be the difference in the game. And he's got to make good decisions.
You mentioned T.Y. Hilton. People should understand there's basically no receiver in the NFL that plays better in a building than T.Y. Hilton does in Houston. Seven games in that stadium, NRG Stadium in Houston, 133 yards per game in those seven. The last two times he's played there, 199, nine catches for 199, five catches for 175, and two scores. One of those games was last year when the team wasn't good and Luck wasn't playing. He still showed up and dominated. They won in that building the year they only won two football games. Like, this is, the Colts have always had success against the Houston Texans, and T.Y. Hilton's been dominant against the Houston Texans. You mentioned the Deshaun Watson and the sacks, and we talked about earlier in the show, Dak Prescott, 15 of his sacks were on him, according to Pro Football Focus. 14 of Deshaun's were on him. Not on the offensive line. But that also means, the guy was sacked 62 times. So that means 48 times this year, there was nothing that quarterback could do, and it was either breakdown in protection or overpowering defensive linemen on offensive line. That's been the issue with the Texans all year, is their biggest weakness, the place they have the least money, the least draft capital, is their offensive line. And the Colts have shown you over these last 10 games, if you have a glaring weakness up front like that, they don't need Andrew Luck to be dominant to beat you. They can beat you defensively. They got the number one scoring defense in football over the last 10 weeks. They can beat you that way as well.
Yeah, there's a couple things that I want to watch in this game. T.Y. Hilton, the stats and stuff are great. We know about DeAndre Hopkins, his lack of notoriety, now starting to get that with the best sure-handed receiver that we have. Who are the others? Who are going to be the other players, either the tight ends or coming out of the backfield, to be able to help these players? Because whichever offense is able to help that star receiver, because I don't believe those star receivers, like Coach Mangini said, they're going to try to take those guys out of the game. So which other group can help support their superstar receiver? And I believe that Deshaun, his legs are going to be more important in this game, because I wouldn't sit back there in this game. This is not college. This is not Alabama. This is the NFL, and the more times you get sacks, the more drives are killed, the more possessions are lost, and then you start to feel the pressure. So once you get through that first half, the second half of the playoff games are totally different, because you got 30 minutes and you're getting ready to go on vacation. So those adjustments at halftime become more critical. So for me, if I'm Deshaun, right now it's about winning games and moving the sticks. And I would try to concentrate a little bit more on utilizing my legs in the playoffs, because that part NFL defenses are not ready for, and there's nothing more frustrating.
And with Pro Football Focus, I respect the work that they do, but it's not the be-all, end-all.
It's not a science.
And I'm sure if we talked to the coaching staff, they'd probably have a different number in terms of how many sacks he was responsible for versus the Pro Football Focus number. And besides that, there are times that the O-line is going to break down, but quarterbacks will see that and get rid of the ball. You can't just say, oh, it's his fault, I'm going to eat this sack, or I'm going to try to extend this play, when there's no chance to actually...
The force multipliers do something negative plays.
And it's the same thing with quarterbacks. Sometimes they throw a bad ball, and the good receivers, they knock it down so it can't get intercepted, and everybody plays a role in that. Now, Deshaun Watson, to me, was one of the most unique guys that I've ever seen with the football in his hand in college. I remember wondering how it was going to fit, how it was going to work in the NFL, but I knew what a problem he was going to create with his feet. And I think that's got to be a big part of what he does this weekend.
And where Deshaun deserves an enormous amount of credit, this last year during that outstanding run that he had, he did it despite turning the ball over nearly every game. The first six games of this year, he had an interception or two in every single game of the first six. In the last 10, 9 of 10 games, no picks. So maybe one of the reasons that the sack numbers are as high is he's not taking chances with the football. He is eating it more often. Now, you'd like it to be neither a sack nor an interception. But the one bugaboo with him, even during his great run last season, was a lot of turnovers. I think led the league in interceptions in that stretch, just had overwhelming touchdown numbers. During this stretch of great football by the Texans, he has taken care of the ball as well as any quarterback in the NFL. He's going to have to do that this week against the Colts, because one thing I don't think we can rely on for the Texans is some huge defensive plays up front, which is what they have made their money on defensively, because the Colts have been the best offensive line in the league the last 10 games of the year, only giving up 8 sacks.
See, there's no doubt he can play. There's no doubt if he if the play breaks down, he can run. We all know that. But what do you say to a guy who's still a relatively young quarterback? He did miss a lot of last season, getting ready for a big stage, his first playoff game. There's a lot of pressure around Houston for him to sort of save this team and get them back into the, you know, the real competitive talk of the playoffs.
Yeah, it's really hard for guys who come from college and are dual threat quarterbacks, because once they get into the league, they hear what the voices are saying. Oh, he can't. He'll never be a pocket. So what they do is they stay in the pocket too much. Dak Prescott is an example of that. Deshaun is an example of that. So in trying to become a pocket quarterback, they become stationary compared to being athletic. It's the playoffs. It's about winning, and I'm sure the coaching staffs will make sure that the young quarterbacks know that. Use your legs when you get an opportunity, because in these playoff games, man, additional first down, an additional drive, you get another look at that defense. It becomes so important to stay on the field. When I've experienced difficult defenses in the playoffs, it's because we couldn't move the chains. We couldn't get any type of momentum. So watch team momentum. Watch teams that are able to generate first downs to keep their momentum going, and which quarterback can make them little extra plays to give them an extra chance, I believe is going to be a huge storyline Saturday and Sunday.
And with Donovan McNabb, what it became later in his career is he would run the ball on third down in 2 minutes in the red zone. In those critical situations, that's where he was more likely to run the ball. And I'd say the same thing with any quarterback that has that ability. If you're going to take those chances, take it in the most critical situations. Use that skill set in the red zone, in 2 minutes, on third down, as opposed to first and 10, where maybe you're taking a hit or taking a sack, and when it's, you know, it's not quite the same return on investment.
Highest leverage situations.
Highest leverage situations, default to that if that's what it calls for. Yeah.
All right, Coach, stick around. Take a break. Coming up, is Mike Tomlin handling the Antonio Brown situation the right way? That's next on First Things First. On Saturday, it's a Big Ten showdown on Fox as number 8 Michigan State hits the hardwood against conference foe Ohio State. Catch it all 11:30 a.m. Eastern on Fox and the Fox Sports app. Back here with Coach Mangini. All right, Coach, things are getting interesting in Pittsburgh. Steelers head coach Mike Tomlin addressed the media yesterday. A room full of inquiring minds asking about what in the world is happening with Antonio Brown. Did he ask to be traded? Reports are that he did. Tomlin said yesterday he didn't. A lot of he said, he saids from this story. Here's more now from head coach Mike Tomlin.
Obviously, we take his lack of communication, his lack of presence, particularly on Saturday prior to the game, to be something that's very significant. It will be handled appropriately. So I'm not going to speculate on trades and things of that nature. We haven't formally received a request in that regard. So I'm not going to speculate. I'm not going to speculate in terms of where the discipline might go and things of that nature. Just know that it's going to be addressed. And it will be addressed and needs to be addressed for obvious reasons. And when we're talking about our darkest hour, okay, we're talking about playing to win a game and needing other dominoes to fall for us to be in the tournament, and a guy not communicating, that is a real element of discussion.
Does it reach a point where it becomes more problematic than it's useful?
Certainly.
Coach, he sounds upset. He sounds like not the Mike Tomlin that we're sometimes used to, where he sweeps everything under the rug and things aren't a big deal. He sounds like this is a big deal.
Well, it's upsetting. How could it not be upsetting? You have one of your best players who not only doesn't show up but doesn't communicate, and you are playing for your playoff life and for the division, and that's a hard thing. Now, that being said, you know what you're getting into. Most of the time, you sign a contract extension. You're not tricked by people's
sometimes in free agency, you can have some excuses.
Actually,
because you miss a little bit.
If they're not in the building and you don't have that firsthand knowledge, yeah, you can be fooled occasionally there. But this is a player that was in the building, and I'm sure there's probably way more to this story than what we're seeing right now. And if you want to live in that world and you're gonna commit big money to players that can be unpredictable at times, then you better be ready to live with unpredictability. And that's the world that the Steelers have lived in for a long time, and it's paid off for them quite a bit. It's not the world that I was from. It's not necessarily the world that I believe in, but other people have found a way to make that work. Now, that being said, you own what happens when it happens, because you went in to it with your eyes wide open.
This is, but even by Steelers standards, this is an extreme circumstance. You guys both, Chris and you, Coach, talk about how the public doesn't understand how many, for lack of a better term, crazy guys are in an NFL locker room, and how many things happen in the locker room that is just maybe the general public would be shocked by, but for you guys, it's just kind of just part of going to a very unique office, right? And so, and we were talking off the air about a guy who you just didn't know on any given day what guy you were getting as far as in the meeting room, as far as what his general demeanor was. That's one thing, and every team's got to deal with that. It's another thing when a guy goes AWOL. Like, that is not typical. That is not, there aren't a litany of examples of guys in what is essentially a playoff week of Antonio Brown's stature or of anyone's stature not showing up for a couple days, and then the agent calls the coach day of the game, hey, my guy's going to play. Like, even by the Steelers' standard of it's a different family with different relationships, this is an extreme enough circumstance where what would typically be our year-end press conference where we're addressing everything, they had a press conference where Tomlin was asked midway through the press conference a question about the middle linebacker position, and he flatly said, listen, we'll address all that later. We are here to address a particular circumstance, and it's the future of Antonio Brown and the recent history of Antonio Brown. And I just feel like Tomlin was put in an impossible spot where he had no choice but to not play AB on Sunday, right? We all agree there was no chance he could say, okay, when Rosenhaus texts him, all right, good, he'll be active. So he is put in a position where he can't play a guy. We saw what happened to their offense without him. Juju had a great year, but all of a sudden when Juju was getting AB's coverage, that offense grinded to a halt.
What would have happened, though, if they lost that game and the Ravens
and
lost?
The Ravens, that's
and
what,
he didn't play.
Right.
There would be a bunch of people saying, how could you not play Antonio Brown? How could you possibly put the rest of the organization and the rest of the team at such a disadvantage and not play that guy? But what I'm saying is, if they had lost that game
and the Ravens had lost and
the Steelers were out, or you know, however it would have worked out.
Exactly right. If Baker had pulled off the upset and the Steelers had lost, so they would have been in with a win, and they lose 13-10 because they can't. Exactly. What is the narrative?
The world would be crying about, why didn't he play? How could you let this minor infraction or this misunderstanding push you out of the playoffs? And these things happen, and these things happen way more than is brought out publicly. And, you know, at this point, they've got a whole offseason to figure it out before they start the regular season.
Football players are like kids, and kids will push you as far as they feel like they can get away with as far as their parents. Now, Nick, you said that they put Mike Tomlin in a
impossible position.
Well, Mike Tomlin, in the way that he has led the team, allowed this to happen because he left the facility on Wednesday after a dispute with the star quarterback. Didn't come on Thursday. Now, to me, I played 16 years in the league, and I'm talking about, man, I did a lot of stuff. But it was never acceptable for me to miss work or any of my teammates to miss work. Now, a handful of times, there were examples. I'm talking about a handful. And I played with a bunch of rowdy, crazy. I'm talking about guys hung out all night. But there was not one day where it was acceptable for all of us not to be there. I was always taught to either come to work and report in, and I'll decide if we're going to send you home. So these things that Mike Tomlin has allowed to do, and the only reason why they're having that press conference, because the toothpaste got out and we was able to see it. The injury report was false, and he knew that ultimately the public was getting ready to know. So he tried to get ahead of this. So Mike Tomlin, and the way he's decided to manage the Pittsburgh Steelers, allows something like this to happen. Because as a coach, Dennis Green told me, listen, don't embarrass me. Don't put me in a position, because if you do, I will choose what's best for the team. I will not choose you. So Mike Tomlin, yeah, he's got to be soul searching, because to me, his career is in the balance. What kind of coach is he going to be? And to me, I believe this is going to be a watershed moment as far as how long he's going to be able to stay with the Steelers, or is 2019 that going to be the last year of the Steelers as we know it?
What about Antonio Brown? What do you think the future is within this organization for Antonio Brown?
Well, the future depends on what happens over the next few months. The future depends on Antonio's perspective. Does he come in? Does he have a sit-down with ownership, with Mike Tomlin? Do they get to a point where they actually understand how it got to this point? And being able to sit down at a table and say, okay, this is what happened. Why did it happen? How is it never going to happen again? And there'd be a real commitment to doing that and some honesty about how you got there. To me, then he's back. Now, if ownership has reached the point of no return, then it doesn't matter what he says. They're gonna push it off.
I remember one time with Randy Moss, him and I had messed up the schedule. We were getting ready to go to a playoff game. Not going to tell you which one. But Moss had messed up the schedule, and I had called him on the phone. He was going to get his haircut, and I was like, bro, we got a team meet. And he was like, man, I'm already at the barbershop. I'm already downtown. I was like, man, I'm going to the facility. I called Coach Green. Hey, man, Randy's going to be – and we were scrambling because he was going to be 10 or 15 minutes late. I have never been in any type of locker room where a guy wasn't here that we weren't concerned about his well-being and or we had to find out. So what they're doing in Pittsburgh is stuff that I have never seen in the NFL.
I want to ask you a question because you said something I've heard a lot of people say this week, which is, and it's similar to one of the things you've said, which is if you're not coaching it, you're allowing it. Or am I misquoting that? Yeah. Along those lines?
If you're not coaching, if you're either teaching it or tolerating.
Sure. And with Tomlin, you're saying he allowed this situation to come to pass. Once they paid Antonio Brown a second time, he had his rookie deal, got the big extension, they then gave him a second big extension, where was the point where Mike Tomlin, what could he have done leading up to this? What could he have done? I mean, we wouldn't have, none of us thought that when Antonio threw the cooler last year, you bench him for a game. We all thought, listen, that's a fiery player, that happens. And you don't, and I remember you saying you don't penalize the other 52 guys. Like, but you can't take money from
that,
him.
That narrative right there, to me, is the problem. That's a fiery player, that happens.
Yeah, you have a video of that the next day, and you show it to the team, and you tell them, I'm not going to allow it. And it's not acceptable behavior.
But the scouts will do that a lot of time in the meeting room. He's a little bit immature. He's a fiery player. He's competitive. All these euphemisms for this is a disruptive guy that's going to have to, you know, be handled in a different way.
But I mean, practically speaking, because I remember us talking about that the day after and the week after, and nobody thought you bench him. You have limited what you can fine a guy, and especially
when
a guy makes that
time. What you have to do is, man, you have to be consistent before the team.
Okay.
The rules apply to everyone. And you have to be able to discipline guys, and you have to be able to chastise guys, superstar guys, in front of the other players. Okay. Because it lets the other players know that we're all on the same footy. Somewhere along the way, Mike Tomlin has allowed the Pittsburgh Steelers, not only A.B., Ben Roethlisberger, L. Bell, and a bunch of them. I got stories like Ryan Clark, but I decide not to utilize them the way Ryan used them in saying that they created this monster. Mike Tomlin has been a part of it. If you're the head coach, you should take some of the responsibility.
Can you change that? Can you, as the head coach, can you change the way your players see you if you've been there for so long, doing it one way for so long?
Look, if you're going to benefit from these types of players, then you also got to live with the downside of these types of players. And that's a decision that you make organizationally. That's a decision that you make in the draft room, in free agency. And you can manage it and to some degree on a day-to-day basis. But there's a level of behavior that at some point doesn't make sense. And it's you bought into it. You bought it.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.